Welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to Hopelessly Romantic Behind the Page. I gotta say, it's getting chilly around these parts. And as I am a transplanted Floridian gearing up for another Midwest winter, I'm still not fully adjusted. Cold for me used to be anything under 70 degrees, but the longer that I'm up here in the north, I'm finding that I have fundamentally changed. I wandered outside the other day with open-toed shoes, leggings, and a t-shirt, and it was snowing, and I wasn't really bothered by it. Mostly. But what better way to hold off winter's chill than to read a Western summer romance? So let's take one more look at The Horse Trainer's Secret. So when I really did first start this podcast, way back at the beginning when we were still Heather Reads, the podcast, I had an expectation. And longtime listeners will know that my expectations were soundly trounced. What I mean is that I had always thought of Harlequin books as trashy erotic romance. At least that's how I remembered them. There was a plot, or as much plot as you could squeeze in between the sex scenes. I don't know if it's changed in the last couple of decades, but it's generally how I kind of remembered the books. So, boy, was I surprised when I found out that this was very much not the case. I think there's a lot of tonal dissonance depending on the book. So if we take a story like The Horse Trainer's Secret, it is sweet, it is gentle and fluffy, and then all of a sudden we get outdoor sex while out on a trail ride. So you could say that I did not see that coming. But other than mentions of sex that happens off screen, that's all we get. I've gone on and on about show, don't tell, and I think that's an example of using telling instead of showing that doesn't work in this context. We could have more sex for sure. I don't know if there's like a certain kind of page count, if there's certain word counts that they have to keep in line with, so there's only room for this, this, and that. There could be more. Like, come on, show us, don't tell us that these are two people in love having a lot of sex. So come on, man, let's go. So I added the spicy rating to the final score at the end of the episodes because I was really hoping to find more books like His Majesty's Forbidden Temptation. There was a lot of sex in that book, comparatively speaking. And I figured I needed a better way to convey that particular aspect of these novels. But as I'm looking at the general collection of books that I've read so far, only a few have stood out in the erotic department of our erotic romances. For me, from my perspective, it's not a mistake that the two Gold Star books on my shelf right now are both filled with more erotic scenes than we generally see in these books. A Duke in Wolf's Clothing had some genuinely touching moments, and I mean that literally. While it was still holding into that historical aspect, there was a lot more sexual tension than there was sex. It didn't shy away from sex in general. It has so far been the only book that admitted that women gauge in masturbation, at least as far as I can remember. That feels groundbreaking for anything that I've read in general. And A Blues Singer to Redeem Him had some of the more graphic descriptions that we've read so far. I was really, really impressed by that. And there was a little bit of tonal dissonance. It was like, you know, there was this high intense racial drama, and then all of a sudden, you know, she's getting it good. Anyway, another close contender would be An Unexpected Earl. And that had the virtue of what we could maybe guess of an exhibition scene. They didn't quite get to the dirty, but it was pretty darn close to what we would consider exhibition. You will also note that two of these books, both A Duke in Wolf's Clothing, or A Wolf in Duke's Clothing, and an Unexpected Earl, they were not Harlequin books. Something that I haven't thought about in a long time that got woken up by this last book here was when I had moved into a house that I shared with some roommates back in my college days. And that was a wild group of gals, and I mean that in the best of ways. To put it bluntly, while we were laying out the rules of who could bring who over at what times, they promised me that they were chill with any shenanigans that might occur. I was warned that if they thought that I was trying to sneak around or get a person in without anybody knowing or trying to keep quiet, they would likely figure out what I was up to, because, you know, thin walls. They would go up, bang on my door, and this is a quote, they would shout, "Stop having timid sex." The implication, of course, being that, have all the sex you want. We are adults. We don't care. Don't think you have to, like, hide. So this, I can't believe that I was reminded of this, but really, right now, I just want to go to the doors of the Harlequin offices, bang on them, and scream, "Stop having timid sex." We are adults. We know what we're getting into when we pick up one of these novels. Like I said, I had an expectation. I thought I was going to get raunchy romps around, you know, wildflower fields or something. I almost got one. We kind of got that a little bit. But I want a book that isn't afraid to use the word ass instead of rump, of all things. I really couldn't get over that in The Horse Trainer's Secret. I will never forget this moment of he rubbed his hands over her rump, her hips. It's like, no. These are two people out in the wilderness. They're practically tied to their horses. They are getting down as purely as nature intended. This is one of the wilder situations outside of crazy bathhouses and whatnot, and it is most certainly not what I would expect, knowing what I know now of Harlequin books. So why do we have to censor our words? All of these books, every single one, they're dancing around terms, and it's almost distracting. So, as a really good example, I don't want to read about a button, or whatever, or nub. Bundle of nerves is a popular one that I've seen, and it's one I'm willing to let slide. But we can call it what it is. We are allowed. It's the clitoris. Go ahead, say it. Right now. Great. Say it again with me. Clitoris. I don't know what the sexual education situation is in Canada. I'm very, very much removed from that cultural aspect. I don't know what it is that they're doing. And I really don't know how much the Harlequin books are reflecting on that background and education. But here in America, it's bad. It is not a good situation. It was doubly worse for me down south, surrounded by a billion Baptist churches, all lobbying to keep youngsters from even knowing what a condom was. So now we've got a bunch of people, women especially, wandering around being afraid of the words to describe their own bodies. It's a lot, because I remember, like, they would take us into rooms, they would separate the boys from the girls, and they would give us, like, the most clinical, disassociated, dissected picture of a cross-section of female and male anatomy. Like, I'm not saying that they were supposed to make it sexy. Oh, God, no. But it was so unrelated, like I could not connect to what that paper was showing me versus what was actually part of my body. Like, nothing made sense to me. And the lesson that they would continually drive home was, you are only supposed to get sexy to become pregnant. That's the only reason. But you gotta be married first. Like, if you're married, you can have some sex, but really, all your body parts are for is for making babies. They didn't really discuss with us, like, the actual parts of our bodies and just how they worked in general. It's just more, it was so clinical. And now we can't even say the words to describe our bodies because we are so inundated that it's sinful, that it's wrong, but it's not. I remember reading a few Harlequin books in school, in high school. We were all a bunch of shy fantasy and anime nerds, my whole group of friends, and none of us really got a healthy, solid foundation of proper sexual education. And Harlequin was good in some ways to introduce us to these scenarios. Like, there was no way that I was going to be able to figure out certain things, so to speak, if I hadn't read any of these books. Like, I was ashamed to talk to some of my most trusted friends about any of this kind of stuff. I couldn't talk to my parents, barely. We just don't want to talk about these things. So Harlequin, in a way, kind of woke me up a little bit. But you could probably guess that there is a big, glaring problem with that situation. Harlequin is not meant for repressed 16-year-olds. It is meant for adults. I probably would have gotten in serious trouble if I had gotten caught with one of these books, but it was all we had, and it should not have been that way. So now, full disclosure. While I describe myself as a fantasy nerd and not into the romance genre, that does not mean that I don't have erotic romance on my shelf. I have a few. And as a matter of fact, they are quite a bit more raunchy than anything that I have ever read from Harlequin. I will not lie to you, they are probably spicier than what you might imagine you would find on my shelves. I've really been ruminating on the idea that I should pull out one series on my shelf in particular and feature it as a long-running feature, I guess. It's too many words of the same, on the show. And I think it would surprise a lot of my listeners that I already have this under my belt. And half the reason that I want to do this is because I am getting bored with such straightforward, one-scene-only vanilla sex books. Even though The Horse Trainer Secret had that spicy outdoor excursion, this is likely the source of my apathy towards the book. I'm guessing now that it's not apathy towards this particular story, it's just apathy towards Harlequins in general. It's like if somebody was like, hey, have some oatmeal, it's delicious. I'm like, hey, oatmeal is delicious, I like it if I put this stuff in it. And if it's the same thing every day, you're going to get bored. You're going to go, no, I don't want to eat oatmeal, I've had it for like 15 days now. So I guess I've been feeling a little bit burned out lately, and to tell you the truth, I really didn't know what I was going to talk about for this episode of Behind the Page. I was genuinely worried, like, I have nothing to say. I don't know what I'm going to say. But now that I've gotten almost, let's see here, 3 pages of talking points, little notes about how bored I am with the sex in these books and the background that I have, I think I've gotten a pinpoint on what's actually been bothering me. So I know when I started this podcast, I wanted to keep it mostly PG-13. I still want to adhere to that for the most part, but I don't click the explicit box for nothing when I post these episodes. So I know that I want to find more erotic romance novels that honor the erotic part of that description. Probably another source of my apathy is that, you know, a lot of elements are the same in a lot of these books, but, you know, they're popular for a reason. I think I remember a lot of the reviews, I think I mentioned this before, on His Majesty's Forbidden Temptation. A lot of the reviews are like, it didn't end with a pregnancy. She always ends with a pregnancy. I was so disappointed. So I guess there are other expectations that I don't think to look for, but people are really hoping for. So there are formulas in place for a reason. But when Delia was running around in this book for The Horse Trainer Secret, I was so tired. I know that a typical reader of the Harlequin would see, like, this guy getting thrown at by this desperate girl who so wants her, who so wants to be with him, but he still has eyes for the heroine, and he is, like, zero focus in, and the reader gets to watch him, like, push away. It's like, no, you're not the one for me. I want only this lady. I can really see the appeal in that. But I am very, very much not fond of the women as enemies trope. I want to see more of women supporting other women. Like Princess Ilsa from, Pregnant with His Majesty's Heir. She was great. I loved that aspect. And I want to see more of that, but I don't see a lot of that. We get people like Brandy and Delia climbing all over the guys right in front of the heroines, and it's a little annoying. I also realized on this similar note that I haven't really talked a lot about tropes lately. I haven't declared a trope for anything yet. Yes, this one is horses. The horses trope is alive and well. So we've got that one going. There's third act separation. I know I talked about Let's Have a Fundraiser. I see aspects of that sort of trope in a lot of different books. This one was the library opening where our heroine Megan was confronting, I guess, Nick, and then she sees Delia. But there was the whole run up to the library opening. The book that I'm reading now has something similar, but it's a little different. We'll talk about that next time. But I haven't seen anything new that's popped out for me with the tropes. I'm keeping an eye out, but nothing's really sticking out as much. I probably need to read a few more before the patterns start showing themselves a little bit more vividly. But I'm also kind of getting a little dulled a little bit because, like, I'm seeing the same thing over and over again. And sometimes if you see the same thing over and over again, you're going to miss stuff. And then also, of course, you heard my rant on the epilogue. It's like the epilogue added nothing. I would like better, more effective epilogues where you actually see real time pass and a grown relationship where they are better together and they are deeper in with each other. So come on. We got this going. So with all of this mess out of the way, let's go into what I have been reading this week. Now at long, long last, I have finally gotten my copy of Truth of the Divine by Lindsay Ellis, and it is superb. I waited a long time for this book. I had pre-ordered it. It was supposed to be a birthday present, but it just kept getting delayed and delayed. The book's release was already pushed back a week because of, you know, global shipping issues. And I suspect the fact that I had pre-ordered a signed copy, that added to the problem of the shipping. So it was only a couple weeks ago that I was able to actually get the book. So anyway, Truth of the Divine is the second book in the Nomuena series. I think that's how I say that. Nomena, whatever. It's following the first installment, Axiom's End. I've talked a little bit about Axiom's End on the podcast before, but a quick rundown of that first book is that it takes place in an alternate version of 2007, where aliens have landed. Lee's large dragon-slash-machine-slash-insectoid aliens called amygdalins. They've been on Earth since the 70s. Mostly it's a refugee group fleeing a genetic purge, or i.e. a genocide. Another amygdalin, coded amber sand, landed in 2007, yes, to find this refugee group, and he was of the same genetic group. He was just trying to get back to his family. Most of that first book surrounds the story where first contact was leaked by a whistleblower and the alien group running from agents meant to track them down. The main character is Cora, a young woman who gets mixed up with Ampersand and agrees to act as his interpreter. It's a little messy for her because her aunt has worked for the alien organization taking care of the aliens, called Rosa, and her father is the whistleblower that leaked the fact that there are aliens on Earth to the general populace. So she is kind of in a mix of a bad place, more or less. So now we've got the second book, Truth of the Divine, and it is very, very different from the first, but that is not a bad thing. It calls on some really dark themes, such as PTSD, self-harm, trauma. So for anyone who experiences serious panic attacks, maybe put yourself into a safe and solid place before opening the book. It was a little bit of a rough go for me. It also uses the story of aliens as an immigrant narrative. Anyone who's been paying any attention to politics in the last decade would be aware of the vitriol that has surrounded immigrants in this country. The author examines this narrative with literal aliens as immigrant avatars. It goes very deep into personhood and what qualifies a person as, well, a person, both by human standards and amygdalin standards. It is an intense story. It ripped my heart out, and it was incredible. I highly, highly recommend you to go out right now, go get this book, and I will also highly encourage you to listen to the audiobook. Do both. Three voice actors lended their talents to bring this story to life, and I cannot say enough good things about their performance. Just go. I'm serious. And so with that, I will leave you here. I will see you next week as we read Reawakened at the South Pole by Juliet Hyland. Thank you so much for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. Also, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It will go a long way to help the show, and that way I can keep bringing you lots of fun episodes. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwang Hyun Cho, and Hopelessly Romantic is an H with K production. And remember that it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.